At Boomer Living Senior Living Broadcast, we are proud to be a part of a group of extraordinary industry leaders who are working toward a stronger society and a better future for older adults. Increasing longevity unlocks extraordinary economic growth and opportunities for personal fulfillment. We are living longer due to the advancements in science, sanitation, and safety in public health achievements. Today's older adults are healthier and more vibrant than previous generations. They are changing retirement norms and they want to continue to live with purpose, thrive, and contribute. Older adults are driving growth and opportunity in entrepreneur ventures. Their guidance and support enhance performance and bring generations together in the workplaces and in the classrooms. Their balance and problem-solving abilities contribute to society's well-being. So we hope that you enjoy these conversations with ideas that will expand perspectives and encourage more people to join our efforts. So please let us know your thoughts, and I invite you to be a part of the conversation. Dr. Aubrey de Grey is a famed biomedical gerontologist who devised a concept of sense. He's a chief science officer and a co-founder of Sense Research Foundation, and it seeks to put this research into action through regenerative medicine. So you're really working on some cutting-edge biotechnologies, and I'm excited to pick your brains today. Dr. Grey, thank you so much for joining me on Boomer Living today. Welcome.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Can you start by giving us a brief overview of what SENSE is, what it stands for, and what does that mean?
Sure. So SENSE is an acronym, S-E-N-S, not F-E-N-E, and it stands for Strategies for Engineered Negligible Senescence, which is a hell of a mouthful, so we never really bother with that. We simply mean that we are all about developing medicines that can deliver comprehensive rejuvenation. So rejuvenation, of course, means reversing biological age. It means taking someone who has reached the age of maybe 60 or 70 and putting them into the same state of health, both mentally and physically, that would be typical of a younger adult. Now, what that means is basically restoring the composition of the body to what it was at the molecular level and the cellular level. Because after all, the body is a machine. Of course, it's an insanely complicated machine, but it's still a machine. So its function is determined by its structure, right? So if we can repair essentially the damage that the body is building up throughout life, so to make that damage be low enough that the body doesn't mind about it, then we restore health. That's what it's all about. It's really conceptually just like what you would do in terms of preventative maintenance on a car that would allow the car to live for 100 years, even though it was only designed to live 10 years.
In slowing down the aging process, and what SENSE is trying to accomplish?
So the difference between slowing aging down and reversing aging, actually rejuvenating people, is absolutely key to understanding what we do. And in fact, really, you know, if you had to ask what is my personal single main claim to fame scientifically, it is the fact that I was the first person about 20 years ago now to realize the initially very counterintuitive thing that reversing aging is easier than slowing it down. People would think it's got to be harder, right? But actually, the thing is that if you want to slow aging down, then it's like making a machine run more cleanly, you know, which is, you have to understand really in a lot of detail how the machine is working in order to be able to improve the way it works so that it lays down less damage than it normally would. And we are light years away from that level of understanding of the way the human body works. Whereas rejuvenation, as I said, is damage repair. And that does not mean retracing the chemical steps that created that damage in the first place. It just means removing the damage. In just the same way that, for example, going back to a car, if you have rust that's accumulated and you want to make sure that the rust does not accumulate so much that the doors fall off, then you don't de-rust. You don't reverse the chemistry of rusting, scrape off the rust, right? So it's the same deal. Damage repair does not involve the same pathway, and therefore it's actually a lot easier than retardation of the rate of creation of damage.
So why do you want to end aging, and what motivates you to do this type of work?
Yeah, so I get this question all the time. What's so bad about aging? Why would I want to end aging? And of course, what I have to point out is that you would only ever ask that question if you are completely confused about what aging is. Because let's face it, what I mean by aging is simply the ill health that goes with having been born a long time ago. And nobody wants to be sick, however long ago they were born. If you just remember what aging is, you don't ask the question, right? Because all I'm doing is medical research to allow people to be healthy who otherwise would not be.
That's a good point. So now I've heard you're famous for saying that the first person to live to 1,000 has already been born, and that you think that we'll find a way to perfect anti-aging treatments within the next 20 years. So how do you convince people that this future like this is possible and that we're close to it already?
First of all, I have to correct you slightly. The thing I say is a little bit different from that. I definitely never say that I'm certain that we will defeat aging completely within the next 20 years. Like any pioneering technology, there is always the possibility that there could be new obstacles that we haven't yet encountered that will slow us down. So I say that there is a 50% chance that we will reach that point in the next 20 years, actually more like 15 years now. But I totally accept that there's at least a 10% chance that we won't get there for 100 years. So that's important to remember. Other than that, though, you're quite right. This is what I say. So let me take both of your statements that you're quoting me as separately. The first one about longevity. As you say, I have claimed that the first person to reach the age of 1,000 is already alive. In fact, I think that person is probably already in middle age. So that's a very strong thing. And it arises from my answer to the second statement, which is that I think we will comprehensively, completely bring aging under control in the next 15 years or so. In order to explain why, I need to divide our efforts chronologically into two parts. First part being what's going to happen, in my view, with 50% probability in the next 15 years. And the second part is what's going to happen after that, all right? So in the first part, what's going to happen is not the complete defeat of aging, the complete defeat of aging would mean the development of medicines that can completely repair and eliminate 100% of the damage I mentioned earlier, that the body does to itself throughout life as a consequence of its normal operation, and that eventually starts to make us sick. We will not be able to do that. But I think we will be able to get close enough to that, maybe repair 2/3 of the total damage that is being created, of these many different types, of course, that we will be able to buy time. Essentially, what's going to happen is we'll be able to take these fairly good rejuvenation therapies 15 years from now and apply them to people who are, let's say, 70 at that point. All right? And that will not take them back to being biologically 20, but it probably will take them back to being biologically, let's say, 40. Which means that they won't be biologically 70 again until they're, let's say, 100, right? Because that will be how long it takes for the damage to catch up. Now, at that point, the therapies will not help us anymore because the only reason we didn't get back to biologically age 20 in the first place was because the therapies are not perfect. They only repair, let's say, 2/3 of the damage. But the thing is, when the person's 100, they won't get the same therapy. They will get the benefit of all the work that people like me will have been doing in the meantime during those 30 years to improve the therapy. So if we say that the damage that the first therapies work on 15 years from now is the easy damage and the rest is the difficult damage, then 30 years later, the therapies will be able to repair some of the difficult damage as well. So in fact, we will be able to, if you like, re-rejuvenate the same people that are 100 now and biologically 70 for the second time, so that they won't be biologically 70 for the third time until they're, let's say, 150. And so I defined a word for this. I call it longevity escaped velocity. Once we have a sufficiently comprehensive panel of rejuvenation therapies, damage repair therapies, to be able to buy us 20 or 30 years, like I just described, we're done. It's going to be easy for us to stay one step ahead of the problem. Simply the minimum rate at which scientists need to improve the therapies, and that's a rate that's going to be very easy for us to maintain. So that's why I say that the people who get these first therapies that will give them just 20 or 30 years of extra life will actually have a life expectancy, a predicted average lifespan, that would be equivalent to the situation if they got 100% perfect therapies at that point, even though they won't, because those therapies will not yet. So then in order to come to the longevity calculation, it's easy. We just need to look at the risk of death, the rate of death of people who are young adults today. We can say, okay, supposing in the Western world today, you reach the age of 26, then what proportion of people who do that do not reach the age of 27? Less than 1 in 1,000. So if that probability of death each year were constant and did not depend on how long ago you were born, then, of course, you can do the calculation yourself. It's just like radioactive decay. You're going to have a half-life, so to speak, of more than 1,000 years.
It's a complex answer. For many of us, myself included, it helps understand the concept and the rationale behind it. So do you think there is a point in the future where we'll be able to end aging altogether?
I don't know. The human body is unbelievably complicated. And honestly, if we ever did get to a point where we were truly able to repair 100% of the damage so that we didn't need to carry on improving the therapy, then, you know, that certainly is not going to happen for a very long time. But my whole point with the longevity escape velocity concept is that we don't need to worry about that, because what we care about is the outcome. We care about whether we're going to get sick. And since the body is already naturally set up to tolerate a certain amount of damage, it's okay to have that damage. Okay, we just need to maintain a level of progress so that the damage never gets above that threshold that the body is already set up to tolerate.
So do you think all the new biotech have a dark side to it? For instance, like I'm thinking about CRISPR, C-R-I-S-P-R, and all the talk of designer babies, for example. So what ethical considerations do you take into account when developing those cutting-edge biotechnologies?
Of course, I'm not a bioethicist professionally, but what I can certainly say is that there is nothing special about longevity medicine from an ethical point of view. Absolutely, the same issues do apply that apply across the whole of medicine. In other words, we certainly need to make careful decisions as to the cost-benefit ratio of, for example, approving drugs after a certain amount of testing, or waiting until you've tested them for more, and over-approving certain therapies that might be considered to be not necessary. For example, distinguishing between what's a therapy and what's an enhancement. But this is not specific to longevity medicine.
What role does rejuvenation biotech play in the COVID-19 pandemic? And how would regenerative medicine help us better cope with the pandemic?
So really, those two parts of your question are the mirror image of each other. In other words, regenerative medicine right now doesn't really exist. Rejuvenation biotechnology doesn't really exist yet. So, of course, it is not playing very much of a role in the pandemic. But I believe that the pandemic will play an enormous role in the next few years in rejuvenation biotechnology, because quite soon, as the vaccines start to make an impact, the attention of key top-level decision-makers around the world is going to start to turn away from the immediate issue of getting the pandemic itself under control, and it's going to turn towards the question of how to minimize the likelihood and the impact of the next pandemic and the one after that. So the question is, how do we do that? And of course, one thing we can absolutely say about the current pandemic is that it is enormously more dangerous for older people than for younger adults. Most infections are more dangerous, but the disparity is much bigger for COVID than for a typical infection. So what that means, of course, is that if we had rejuvenation biotechnology so that people who had been born a long time ago were actually not as biologically old, then a lot of lives would be saved. And of course, a very large number of dollars would be saved, which also matters to politicians. So that is the message that we are having to deliver right now. Of course, it can be delivered in a narrow level, in a narrow way, more easily than in a broad, by which we could just say, listen, rejuvenate the immune systems of the elderly. But one thing that I'm always having to communicate is that no system in the body is an island. In other words, you can only really rejuvenate any one system by rejuvenating everything. And the thing is, now we are seeing such promising early stage results in rejuvenation across the board that it is no longer possible to make the case that, yeah, sounds good if we could do it, but it's actually science fiction, so we won't give you the money anyway. You can't say that anymore. We're just doing too well already. But the progress from where we are to where we need to be to really protect people is quite substantial. And of course, it will happen much more quickly if it's better funded. That's just the nature of medical research.
How are you implementing the techniques that you research?
Of course, that's a contradiction in terms, because things that are the subject of research are, by definition, things that don't yet exist and therefore cannot be implemented in one's own life. So I will answer the question in two parts, I guess. First question is, to what extent do I think I will, in the future, implement the things that we are developing in my own life? And I'm quite sure that I will engage in them greatly. I am definitely not looking forward to getting sick when I get old. And I'm very much hoping that medicines of the future will stop that from happening. In terms of where it is today, with medicine that would not be called rejuvenation medicine, because that doesn't exist yet, but which are still available, and they work much less well than the therapies we want to develop. Again, actually, I don't do anything. But that's not because I think that it doesn't make sense for people in general to do anything. Instead, the reason is simply, I have an unusually well-built body. I have had the good fortune to be tested for my biological age in one way or another half a dozen times over the past 20 years or more. And I always come out insanely young, definitely more than a decade younger than I actually am, which means that the rational thing for me to do is to be conservative and to say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So, yeah, I don't do anything, but I'm not saying other people should not.
We talk a lot about longevity, wellness, engagement, and purpose and contribution in all parts of life. Obviously, it's what humanity is, but there's more emphasis is the later years, because that's what enables you to live to the fullest. So however you want to take care of yourself to live vibrantly and to the fullest, there's so many components, right? The wellness of life, whether it's diet, exercise, and nutrition, and spirit, reducing stress, and getting proper sleep. So I think those are key components. And what you're doing is exciting. I'm learning so much, and I appreciate this conversation. So now what breakthrough are you most proud of?
That's becoming a tricky question, because we keep making new breakthroughs. I think I would say that from a personal level, it's still the case that the original big eureka moment that I mentioned earlier from 20 years ago is the biggest thing, where I realized that damage repair is going to be so much easier than slowing down the creation of that. Of course, that was not just a one-sentence realization. It only made sense in the context of how it would be implemented. So it did all happen like in the middle of the night when I was jet-lagged in Los Angeles one day in July of 2000. But it involved putting together a lot of specific technologies for repairing particular types of damage and coming up with the first true divide and conquer damage repair approach. But in terms of what my foundation has achieved, I definitely would have a more difficult time answering the question, because we've achieved rather a lot. Certainly, I would say there's at least four cases where we have made really fundamental breakthroughs in developing technologies that everyone else had given up on, just thinking they were too hard and or not interesting enough or something. And we showed that they could be done, they were promising, and we kickstarted the whole research area, and the people are doing the same thing now. So that's what really Sense Research Foundation was set up to do, and I am very proud of the extent to which we have been able to do it.
Congratulations. Now, what do you see as a long-term future for Sense?
Well, the usual answer that I give when people say, what is the long-term future of Sense Research Foundation, is that I hope it doesn't have one. I hope that in the relatively foreseeable future, maybe 5 years from now, we can just declare victory. Now, what I mean by that is not that we will have these therapies, because as I said, I don't think that we're going to have them for maybe 15 years. Furthermore, I know that we're going to have to improve them after that in order to maintain longevity escape velocity. But already what we are seeing is that Thames Research Foundation is successfully handing off project after project to other groups. In particular, over the past 3 or 4 years, it's become possible for us to spin out projects as startup companies. Of course, the big requirement in order to do that is that there should be investors out there who are courageous enough to, you know, join the dots and see their way to eventual revenue. In order to get to that point, we had to make the early stage proof of concept progress purely on the basis of philanthropy, really public charity. So, yeah, it couldn't be done until maybe 5 years ago. But now it's our business model. We've done it half a dozen times already. And I hope that there will come a point where the philanthropic sector, so to speak, of this movement is no longer needed. And the private sector can do everything. We're not there yet. We're a good few years away from it so far. But that is my goal.
All right. So what do you think is your biggest strength that enables you to have a unique, impactful effect on the work that you do? Maybe something that's not well known about you.
I don't think I'm truly unique or exceptional in any single way. I do think that I'm pretty good in several ways, and I've been able to put those things together. I think I'm a good scientist, and I've also got a certain degree of charisma, maybe, and I've definitely got determination, and I've got a thick skin, which was definitely necessary early on when a lot of people in my field didn't understand anything I was saying, and I had to endure quite a lot of poorly reasoned criticism. So it's really the combination of all those things. I feel I use all of them in combination. And without all of them, I would not have been able to achieve what I have.
Absolutely. Those are great virtues and qualities that you have to endear and be very dedicated in this whole journey. Working closely with repairing illnesses that comes with aging and all the work that you do, has changed you in any way? Let's say you've been doing this 20 plus years, you said. Has it changed you in this journey of 20 years?
I would say I've become a little more able to understand how difficult it is for people to realign their conception of aging, to understand that aging is actually a medical problem rather than some kind of inevitable, natural, universal thing that is in some sense off limits to medicine, which is where people normally start. At the beginning, it just struck me that people were just hypnotized. I actually invented the phrase the pro-aging trance to describe it. I've become more charitable over the years, and I've understood that we've had to put up with aging since the beginning of civilization, because we knew that we had no idea how to do anything about it. And it made sense to be invent irrational rationalizations of it. It's only since I come along and we actually have a plan to do something about it properly, that attitude has become irrational and has become a big part of the problem by virtue of slowing down public spending on things like that.
Do you find it rewarding and why in serving the aging population and the illnesses that comes with aging? What is your thought on that?
I find it immensely rewarding. For the past 20 years, really, I have considered myself one of the luckiest people on earth. It's an insanely indescribable privilege to be able to make this much of a difference. Of course, I mentioned all these qualities that I've brought to the thing. Of course, an enormous amount of the reason why I am what I am today is luck. We're just in the right place at the right time. I feel enormously privileged to be able to make such a difference.
The work that you're doing, it's innovative. Like you said, you have to withstand a lot of opposition. So I admire your dedication and determination. Now, do you have any other thoughts that you would like to share?
I think you asked a very good spectrum of questions, and thank you. I think I've been able to communicate that things are going really well, but still we have some way to go. One thing I should probably emphasize in elaboration of what I said about projects moving from the philanthropic sector to the public sector, right, to the private sector, is that the things that are still being funded philanthropically are still very underfunded. The reason we have adopted this business model of spinning projects out as fast as we can, as soon as we get investors that are interested, is very simple. That investors write bigger checks than donors do on average, which means that the projects go faster on account of having better resources. And that means, of course, that the projects that are not yet at that stage are still going at a rate that is limited, severely limited, by shortage of financial support. So I would just like to urge anyone who wants to know more about this to have a look at our website, sense.org, and learn more about it, ask questions. Anyone has a nice friendly donate button on the page, but of course for large donations there are other ways. And the reason I do all these interviews and lectures around the world all the time is to get the word out and to get this stuff to happen faster and save more lives.
Absolutely. I'll make sure to include your profile, your website, all of your links and the show notes so that listeners and investors would like to reach out to you. It'll be readily available. Thank you so much.
Fantastic. Thank you again for having me on the show.
Thank you so much for joining us this week on Boomer Living Podcast. Make sure to visit our website, boomerliving.tv, where you can subscribe to the show in iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and other platforms. This way, you'll never miss a show. And while you're at it, if you found value in this show, we would really appreciate a rating in iTunes or simply tell a friend about the show. That would help us tremendously. Be sure to tune in weekly for our next episode. And remember, growing old is the purest and the most positive experience of human existence.